Conference record has joined the conference.
Hello.
Great, thanks.
Hi.
Vicky.
Well, right.
We'll probably get started. This is Missy Baranco and here Vicky with Family Voices, and we're excited to have Deb Balston on with us from the Department of Human Services to talk to us about some of the changes to the waiver program. So, Deb, we'll just let you begin, and you can let us know if you want us to ask questions while you talk or if you want us to wait till the end.
I'm fine with questions as we go.
Okay, perfect. And just for everybody to know, you can mute your line. I believe it's *6 or #6. Either way, it goes back and forth. So if you have a lot of noise in the background, it helps to mute it. And I'm actually going to go on mute now also, and then if you have a question, you can unmute yourself. So go ahead, Deb. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Missy. I was thinking about how to approach this topic tonight, and it's like I could just say, here's the three things that changed, and we could be all done, but I decided to give you a little more background, talk about the process we went through and what it really means that we collapsed the waivers. Review what the Developmental Disabilities Division saw as the benefits of collapsing the waiver, why we went through that process, and then touch on some of the new requirements that ended up being added to the waivers that wasn't there before. So I'll hit those three areas. Excuse me. The Developmental Disabilities renewed the traditional waiver and the self-directed supports waiver effective April 1st, 2009, and that renewal was for 5 years. The self-directed supports waiver had been in place for 3 years before that. It was a new waiver, and the traditional waiver has been renewed every 5 years since back in the 1980s. In December of this past year, we prepared an amendment and submitted that to the Center for Medicaid and Medicaid Services to collapse the waivers, basically take the services that are currently in the were in the self-directed supports waiver, those delivery options that weren't in the traditional waiver, add them to the traditional waiver, so we'd end up with all the same services, but they'd just be in one waiver versus in two different waivers. And we propose that that be implemented April 1st of 2011, last Friday. And we received the word last Thursday afternoon that they approved that. So not a lot of lead time, so we had to kind of be prepared to go and still not going at the same time. So really, when you hear that the waiver was collapsed, all the services are still there that were there before. They're just in one waiver. They're not split out in two waivers. And the reason we did that, we felt it would be a benefit for consumers because we knew that individuals that had been living at home with their family that were transitioning from school to adult services, their families needed to make a decision at that time to either continue to self-direct the in-home support, and for many families that was going very well, or stop doing that in order for their child to then, their adult family member, to then receive day support after they were through with special education at age 21. But you couldn't receive both because they were in different waivers. Day supports was in the traditional waiver, and self-directing in-home supports was in self-directed supports waiver, and you can only be in one waiver at a time. So they had to make that choice. And they were saying, no, we really hate to give up the self-directing. That's working so well for us. But they couldn't really justify the child not receiving day support. So that was a tough decision. We thought if we combine them, you wouldn't have to make that choice. We also knew that parents of children less than 3 years of age were not able to self-direct in-home supports because that self-directed supports waiver didn't start until age 3. So if your child was under 3 and you're eligible for DD program management, the only waiver available for you at that time was the traditional waiver. And by traditional waiver, I'll just tell you a little bit, all the services that are in there. That's the infant development services. That's the in-home support. That's provider-directed. That's transition-type group homes. That's the individual-supported living arrangements for young adults, the day support, right? All those other services that are funded through the waiver are in that traditional waiver. So we wanted to give parents of children that option to start self-directing when the child was less than 3 years of age. We didn't see the logic in making them wait till their child was 3 just to self-direct. We also were concerned because individuals may move from one waiver to the other. And that's fine. They have a right to do that. But if they do that within the same waiver year, and for these two waivers, it was April 1st through March 30th, if they did that, they would have used up 2 spots, one in each waiver. By putting these waivers together, you can still move around with services, but you're only using one spot in the waiver. So we felt that it would make our waiver slots go further. When we collapsed the waiver, we added all of the self-directed support waiver spots, and you may have heard them referred to as slots, to the traditional waiver. So we're still able to serve the same number of individuals, but we feel by having them in the same waiver, we're not going to be using 2 spots in 1 year, because maybe there's the family that decided, no, we need to have the day support, and it was mid-waiver year. They switch over, they would have used 2 spots. Or the family that their child turned 3, they continue to be eligible for DD program management, and they wanted to self-direct. They would have used 2 spots. With the collapsing of the waiver, that's not going to happen now. It's going to just be 1 spot that they're using, which will leave another spot open for another family. So those were the benefits we saw of collapsing. And believe me when we said we really had to think hard on those benefits, because doing a waiver amendment, I don't know of anyone that is high on their list of something that they really want to jump in and do. It's like you get a waiver approved. It's like, oh, I don't want to touch that for 5 years because CMS is going to ask questions. So we really looked at that but felt that the benefits outweighed the pain of going through that waiver amendment. And that's what it is. We need to submit amendment to change our waivers. That's how we collapse them. When you do that, you open up your waiver for all new questions. All the questions that you answered before and you received approval on back in the winter of 2009, those questions all became fair game again for the Center for Medicaid and Medicaid Services to say, oh, we don't think that's the way it should be now. You should do these changes. So you will find states that are reluctant to amend waivers unless they need to, but we felt, like I said, that the benefits outweigh the pain. One of the areas that we did feel that there was some logic that we weren't able to convey to CMS, and that's regarding transportation. In both of the waivers, the traditional and the self-directed, one of the services in there was transportation for parents of minor children. And that was on both of those authorization templates. The DD program manager would work with the family. We'd look at the 150 miles in-state. If it wasn't that the child was hospitalized, like a NICU, we wouldn't be reimbursing lodging and meals, and that's because CMS said we couldn't for in-state. But for out-of-state, we'd be looking at the most cost-effective way of trying to reimburse families to go through that process. But we'd also have that $5,200 year cap. When CMS started looking at this, they said, well, you're in-state and you're out-of-state is one service. And we said, yeah, because folks, they're either in state or out of state, but it's still a lot of travel for our family. They did require that we split those into two different services. We're trying to do that in a way that is as transparent as possible for families. The authorization, the DD program management, will be negotiating with the families. We'll still look at, okay, how many trips in state, what's the mileage, how many trips out of state, what's the anticipated cost there. And we'll put $1 amount on the authorization form. What we didn't want is to have to go in and adjust the authorizations because it costs $100 more for that trip out of state than we'd anticipated. But, you know, there was some money left in the in-state budget that didn't end up costing as much. We didn't want to go back and forth and basically be nickeled and dimed to try to get it down to the exact amount on what was in-state and out-of-state. So we're leaving that as one total transportation dollar amount on the authorization. And then we're asking our fiscal agent to track when the family reports to them the transportation reimbursement that they're claiming. They'll be asking the family to say, what was the destination? And if there was, let's say, a family from the western part of the state, they stopped in Fargo for an appointment and then went on to Minneapolis, we're looking at that final destination, and that's how we'll determine where those dollars get reported under. The fiscal agent will then bill the state with two different service codes, one for travel that had an out-of-state destination and one for travel that had an in-state destination. This is after they've reimbursed the family, and they're requesting the reimbursement from the state. So we're just starting that. We're going to see how that goes, if we can continue to try to just have that $1 amount on the authorization and just record it by destination as that goes in. The other requirement that we needed to change with CMS really dealt with the vendors for environmental modification and equipment and supplies. And that did not come from CMS, but it was something that we discovered as we were renewing our request for proposals for the fiscal agent services. We put out that RFP, that request, we got the proposals in, and as we're reviewing them, we realized that the fiscal agent that we had in the past had not been requiring that vendors be registered with the Secretary of State if that was required through state law.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.